From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Greener Views, a unique media resource for information, education, consultation, and fun. Greener Views is a part of the Healthy Homecast Network and is brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Each episode will introduce and connect you with services, products, practices, organizations, and groups that focus on the health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community of all. Find us on the web at www.greenerviews.net. And now, your host, Daryl Whalen.
So hello, and welcome to episode 32 of Greener Views. I'm Daryl Whalen, here with audio engineer Randy Parcell and video engineer Michael Schwartz. Joining us this evening is Terry Phelan from Living Shelter Design Architecture. It's quite mouthful. And the Ecological Home podcast or radio show. We'll get into that a little bit.
Ed Isbell.
Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network and is brought to you by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Welcome to the show, Terry, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure being here.
You're very welcome. So let's get started with what is Living Shelter Design Architecture?
It's a small woman-owned architecture firm in Issaquah, Washington, and we mainly do custom home design, some remodels, some new construction, and our focus is on healthy, energy-efficient homes made from natural materials.
So, what is your specific role and responsibilities in the company?
It's a one-person firm, so I do everything. I wear all the hats. I've got a big pile of hats that I change out whenever need be. I do have a bookkeeper that's a former employee that comes in and helps me once a month or so, and a former employee that does some drafting work for me when I need help in that department. But other than that, I do my marketing and my design work and my drafting work and my research and then the podcast. So I've got a full life.
Gotta love that bookkeeper, huh?
Yeah.
I have a bookkeeper too, and it's just makes my life a lot easier.
Marty was my office manager for 3 years when I had a staff. I had a staff of 6 people for about 6 years. And that kind of drove me crazy, and so I went back to a single-person firm in 2007, just before the economy would have forced me to.
Oh, so the economy. So you were like some kind of a fortune teller. You weren't responsible for the whole thing, were you?
No.
So how did you get started doing this kind of work?
Well, which kind of
work? Architecture and design work. And living shelter.
I've had a love of design since I was a kid. I thought I was going to be a fashion designer until I took a mechanical drafting course the senior year of high school. And I finished a year's worth of the course in one semester and decided I was going to draw houses. Went to community college, got a part-time job while I was going to school there. It turned into a full-time job before I graduated. I always thought I could go back, and I never did.
And the rest is history.
Pretty much, yeah.
And you're still doing fashion designing. It's just on homes and buildings.
And I do still do some sewing and jewelry making and fashion stuff. But mostly it's bigger projects than a wardrobe piece.
You've incorporated environmental responsibility and sustainability into your fashion.
Yep. And that's a big part of who I am, too. And the reason I took that road when I was, when I started my business in 92 was because I could. You know, I'd been working for other people who weren't interested in it. And I saw a book on the shelves, The Straw Bale Home. And it turned on a light switch, and I decided I'd learn as much as I could about straw bale construction. And I spent about a year reading and taking workshops and making connections and made a intention that within 5 years I wanted to be doing nothing but environmentally sensitive design. And it took 8 years to get there. But setting that intention is, I think, what made the difference.
Great. Michael knows about that, right? We're getting into the setting the intention stuff, the hippy dippy stuff. But yeah, when I think of living building, that's what I think of, is the stuff that the straw bale houses. And what about the cob houses?
Cob's beautiful. It takes a while.
Yeah.
Because you're building with these little balls of clay. That's what a cob is. It's not corn cobs. A lot of people think is corn cob, and it's not.
I think that they've actually made houses with corn cobs.
Well, there probably have been houses made with corn cobs, but that's not cob construction.
Ah, interesting. Okay, well, then you got me on that one. Oh, boy, it's been since the late, sometime at least 10 years ago. Well, I guess it was probably closer to 15 years ago. I was at in Lansing, Michigan, an alternative energy and building conference. And that's the first time I was exposed to stuff like straw bale and the cob thing. And there was all kinds of great, there was a parade of vehicles that ran on like various different types of fuels, like air and water and electricity.
Oh, we could use some of those today.
Yeah. That's really cool. So what percentage of the work that you do is along the lines of that straw bale and cob and stuff like that?
I would say about 20% of my projects are truly natural building projects where they're using alternative materials that are very locally found, and you know, they're purchased from people who are part of the community, and they're very low, they're not manufactured products.
Yeah.
And I help people create not only the design for the home, but I also teach workshops for these. So I help people build their homes while teaching other people how to do it. And then the other 80% of my work is using more standard building materials, but in ways that use less materials and create a healthier place.
Yeah, we had Second Use was on here too many episodes ago. And
they've got some fun stuff.
They got some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. That's really neat. Well, we're certainly in a good place in the Northwest for the type of work and the building that you do.
There are a lot of people around here who are of the mindset to do that, to use that. Now, not a lot of people think that straw bale construction makes sense in Western Washington.
Yeah.
And we never try and push that. But we know how to make it work if that's what somebody wants to do. Most of our straw bale work is on the drier side of the Cascades.
Oh, okay. What about the living roofs and the green roofs and the green walls and stuff? Do you incorporate that stuff in there as well?
I haven't had a client who's wanted to do a green roof. I'd love to.
Yeah.
I've suggested it on a couple projects, but it just hasn't come through yet. Green walls are still pretty new.
Yeah.
And they're really expensive. They're mostly used on commercial or industrial projects where they've got like a budget for sculptural or artistic installations, and they can be used for that.
So it's got a lot of a visual type of a thing to it.
Beautiful. The green walls. The first time I saw a picture of one, I swooned. It was just, oh my God. That was on a building in Paris, I think. It was on a a photo of a museum in Paris. And I was going to Europe the next year, and I wanted to put that on my list of things to see, and I never got there.
What about solar?
There were a lot of solar, mostly passive solar.
In your business?
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Had clients who have installed solar technology as well, but we always try and approach the design so that it's using the gifts of the site and making the building as energy efficient as possible and as, you know, oriented to the sun with the right overhangs to make sure it's shaded in the summertime and that the sun comes through in the wintertime, so that they, if they do want to do solar panels, whether it's solar hot water or photovoltaic to produce electricity, that they can put in a really small system. They don't have as much to that has to be produced by the technology.
So one of the things is that we had a little bit of a conversation prior to this with our exchanges, and I remember there was a thing that you brought up about how natural buildings are dictating the future of green building and stuff. Did you want to talk on that a little bit?
Sure, I can talk on that. I think what is happening is that the people that have been in the natural building movement for a while now are starting to be consulted by people who want to do more. The Living Building Challenge, which is a I guess it's a formula for building in tune with nature, using nature as a mentor and as a model. That's also biomimicry, so we can get back to that in a minute. The Living Building Challenge has made it more, how do I say this? Made it even more of a challenge to create buildings that are truly green. Now, LEED, most people have heard of LEED, for leadership in energy and environmental design. That is what most people recognize, and they think if a building is certified LEED, whether it's LEED Gold or LEED Platinum, that it's as green as it can be. But
that's by no means even close to the case.
Yeah, that's not really the way it goes. So the Living Building Challenge, it was a brainchild of a couple of people, one of who is currently the head of the Cascadia chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council, and they think of themselves kind of as the black sheep chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council, which is what LEED came out of. The Living Building Challenge is making it much harder to use industrial materials. So the natural materials are starting to be used more and more. Earth and straw, you know, clays and, you know, untreated wood and natural plasters. And the natural builders are the ones who have the experience with this.
And it's becoming more and more incorporated into the mainstream, and people that at one time had never even given this kind of thinking or this kind of building a thought are now becoming a little bit more familiar with it and a little versed in it, and ultimately more open to the idea of doing something that they may never even given a second thought to before.
Yeah, that's really cool. And there's a natural builder down in Portland who has been doing earthen floors for several years, Sakita Krimmel. She just recently created a formula that could be bagged for doing earth and floors. And she's selling it in stores all over the Northwest, and people are going crazy for it. So it's really fun to see that there's a bridge happening between natural building and green building, and they're kind of coming together.
Yeah, LEED certainly has its positive and its good things about it, but it's more of a corporate, sort of a really recognized thing, and the Living Building Challenge is definitely something more. So our podcast is interviewing the forerunners of change and talking with and meeting and hearing about and learning about people that definitely are doing stuff outside of the box.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really exciting. Thank you so much for sharing that stuff with me. That stuff really gets me going.
Yeah, the Living Building Challenge was exciting for a lot of people when it first came out.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked about it on the show a few times. Uh-huh. It's really cool. So who do you look at as your target clientele for your company?
Oh, boy. Usually people who are baby boomer age. A lot of times they're empty nesters who are downsizing. Sometimes they're a little younger than that. We're kind of seeing a crossover now between our older clientele and the younger clientele. But they're usually interested in, eating organic food, growing some of their own food. They like to be outdoors. Hiking and bicycling. And they're people who, I guess, feel good about themselves and what they're doing. I've had some client or some prospective clients who haven't been very, they have a hard time connecting with me. They have a hard time saying what they want and what's important to them. And I find that those aren't people that I fit well with. In fact, I recently had a client who decided after just our first couple weeks of service that we weren't a good fit. And it hurt a little bit until I started thinking about it and realized they were right.
It's a two-way street, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And you really have to trust your gut. I think a lot of times it's not a tangible characteristic that I could put my finger on and say, that's my ideal client. It's more of a connection.
Yeah.
Because I get into people's personal lives to figure out what's going to work best for them.
Yeah.
And if they don't want me there, then it's not going to work.
Well, if along the way, you spread a little bit of information into their minds and their hearts that they didn't have before, then it's still a victory.
Yeah.
Great. So what, we're getting into a lot of this stuff already. So what are you most passionate about as it relates to this work? It sounds like you're filled with it all over the place, but is there one specific thing that you're really the most passionate about that really gets you up in the morning and gets you going on this stuff and continue it after over 20 years now?
Well, I think you touched on it just a minute ago when you said, if you pass on some information and you educate somebody, education is a big part of the mission of my business. And it's not something that it's not the billable part of my business. It's like the philanthropy part of my business where I educate people whether they want it or not. I give them information all along the way that hopefully will help them make a better choice at whichever place they are to make a choice from. I guess I'm really passionate about connecting with people and making people feel good.
I love it. Yeah, you're a great gal. I love it. I've been in the painting business for 33 years, and it's like 4 years ago I changed my name of my business to Healthy Painting and started doing all this training and learning, and it's just like I can't help but like share all this stuff with my clients, whether they want it or not a lot of times. And you know what? I don't really care, because I think as a person, and I didn't do such a good job at this for most of my life until I really woke up from just like being, you know, just kind of cut off from like all the possibilities. But I can't help but believe in my heart that contributing and participating in life in a positive and productive and instructional and educational manner to the best of my ability is what we're supposed to be doing. We have to make money to some degree to support ourselves, and it doesn't mean that we have to be doing that all the time, 24/7, but the truth of the matter is my life is, this podcast is one small example of that, and some of the other stuff that I'm working on or I've been doing over the years, and you know, the volunteer work and the auctions and stuff our businesses get involved with, it just makes me feel like a person.
Well, that's a really good point. And I think a lot of people are looking for ways to take their career and get it in line with their values.
Yeah.
You talk to people who are excited about their work, and it's work that is in line with their values. The people who are not excited about their work, there's too much contradiction between their values and their work. And so I think doing the things that don't necessarily make money, they not only feed your soul, they fill a need in society. And people out in the community can see that. They
and
recognize
your clients
that.
Can see that.
And when when the community members see what you're doing, that's going to bring you more clients, because you're going to shine in your community as being someone who cares and someone who's doing the right thing.
And ultimately, I believe that that's the kind of thinking and the kind of like being that does hook you up with those quote-unquote target clients and ideal clients.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. I love it. I love it. I love this podcast. So what advice do you have for someone seeking the type of service you offer, either from yourself or from somebody else that seems to be wanting to at least communicate that they're doing something similar?
I would say go on the internet. I mean, that's where most people are getting their information these days. Search for services that have keywords that are part of, you know, what you want to accomplish. Say, you know, green home remodel design for someone like me. Look for someone who has worked in the area that you want to build and has experience doing the type of, not only the type of project, but the type of characteristic. Say, if you want a traditional home, find someone who can design in that direction. Talk to other people who have had work done and get recommendations. Word of mouth is, most small businesses rely on word of mouth for passing on the services that they do, finding new clients through former clients. And then interview 3 or 4 people and find the one that you really connect with. The person you connect with is the one who is going to really be able to visualize your dream and put it into, you know, 3 dimensions. And they may cost a little bit more up front, but usually someone who costs a little more on the service end is going to save you money on the
back end,
the production end of the project. Yeah. I so often find people who will just call me on the phone and say, how much is a set of plans? Or, it's like, well, it depends.
How much is a house?
Yeah. How much does a house cost? How much does a car cost? Well, it depends on a lot of variables.
You want three tires or four?
You want a Volkswagen or a Mercedes or a Lamborghini?
Do you want an iPod or you want an 8-track player? There's a lot of factors.
There's a lot of factors, and you really have to look at the big picture. Don't just look at that one little slice of what's it going to cost me to buy that thing, but what's the total cost? 10 years down the road, what will I have paid out? Not only in services and construction, but in the energy expenditure.
I was online the other day, and I was looking at something business-related, and they were talking about for painters and construction, you know, more like the small-type stuff. And one great piece of advice was look inside their work truck and see what it looks like.
Oh, in the cab?
And, the whole truck, like how organized it is and stuff. And the guy that I work with, Tom, and I were out today looking at a project, and there was somebody doing some work over there in the neighborhood, and it was like this work truck, and it looked like a bomb went off inside there. I mean, it was like garbage and stuff, and debris and stuff, and work debris was obviously falling out of the truck and stuff as they were driving by and stuff. And I didn't think it was funny, but it was kind of funny because it's like it makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's a lot more to the picture than the price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is. And I'd like to add on to that when you asked about giving people advice on where to look. The Northwest Eco Building Guild, I think of that as my tribe. If I hadn't joined the guild 15 years ago, I would not be where I am today.
You were one of the early ones.
I was one of the early ones. I'm an early adopter all the way. That's a great place to find anyone in the design and construction and materials supply realm for home improvements or home construction. They're all over the Pacific Northwest. The strongest chapter is right here in the Seattle area. And they're just a great group of people. It's a great resource.
Great. So let me take a look at time here. Okay. We don't have an official clock on the wall. So, we're really rolling along here.
Time goes fast.
Yeah, it sure does. As a matter of fact, let's take a short break and we'll be right back with the interview.
You are listening to Greener Views.
Me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe. Came to rest on the minefield, blessed with naive mind shield, like a helmet. They would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue, disillusioned little. In the vision of one resides all, destroy the individual, for this is critical. The self ain't everything, hands to grasp, to cling, to mask material, vastly shipwrecked beings. At last, release the greed amassed with capitalist tasks and contact the mass. Communication is all we have in dwindling fast.
Okay, well, welcome back to episode 32 of Greener Views. And with our interview with Terry Phelan here, who was just, she was a B-girling it over here on the floor in between with the hip-hop music there. I say that about everybody. Of course she wasn't doing that. And from Living Shelter Design and from the Ecological Home podcast, and we're going to get in and talk about the podcast and radio show here. What is the ecological home, correct?
It is the Ecological Home. It is a weekly podcast that, similar to yours, except I don't have a video component. I interview different people in the Pacific Northwest, mainly, that are doing interesting things in the realm of sustainable homes and communities, creating resilience for those communities. And it's kind of the second life of the program. I used to do a online radio show that was a 60-minute show broadcast over an internet network. And I did that for a year. I was actually with two different networks over that year's time. And I was doing big names, Sarah Suzanka and Bill Reed and David Johnston and some of the big movers and shakers in the U.S. But I had to pay for my time.
Mm.
And I was given a song and dance that I would have people buying advertising, and of course, you know, I fell for it at the time. I wanted to do something different.
Well, it is possible to do that, but you've got to go get all those people.
Yeah, and there's, you know, here I was, this new person doing national broadcasting. So the national advertisers weren't interested because I didn't have a name, and the local advertisers weren't interested because it wasn't reaching their audience.
Yeah.
So I was kind of stuck in the middle. I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot over those, you know, the 52 months, but, or 52 weeks, but I had to pull back and, you know, make sure I could feed my family. So, about a year later, I was approached by a local philanthropist who wanted me to do a local program and said, you know, send me a proposal. So I did, and they fund me for about half of the time that it takes me to put it together. Not at my architectural rate, of course, but it helps. It makes it possible for me to do it. And then I started that in January of 2011. And in December of 2011, I started being broadcast over community radio in Port Townsend at KPTZ.
KPTZ.
They put me on.
House. Wait, is that it?
In the house. Wednesdays around in the noon hour and Saturdays in the noon hour. And I'm looking to put the program onto Chaos in Olympia at Evergreen.
I got a friend that has a show over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
And then KBCS is the next one on my list. That would be
a
big time.
That would be a big one.
So that's my goal. And we'll,
it's a very good show. It's very educational, very, very professional. Yeah.
It's shorter too. I do a 15-minute podcast and a 30-minute podcast. I actually do a 30-minute interview and then we edit it down into a 15-minute segment and a 30-minute segment because KPTZ just wanted a 15-minute segment.
How did you get started with that initially?
Somebody called me and asked me if I wanted to do a radio show. I had been looking for something new.
Yeah.
I was a little bit burned out on running my architecture firm. I'd had, you know, had a staff for several years, and that took more energy than I anticipated. And just felt like I wanted to do something that would be more effective in creating exponential change, because I felt like we were at a place, the world was at a place that exponential change was necessary, not just a good idea, but necessary. And I'd been looking for something new to do. And I, you know, looking and looking and looking. And I finally just kind of set that aside. And 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from somebody asking if I wanted to do a talk radio program about green building. And it was like, bing.
Cool.
I can do that. And my husband had a background in public radio, so it seemed like he could help me out. And he didn't do much during that first year, but he's now my my engineer, and he does all my editing and helps me with production. So it's a little bit of a family business too.
Great. Yeah, you know, when I started doing this podcast, it's just probably hit past the year mark. I mean, I started on it about a little over a year and a half ago. But when I first had maybe one, two just really funky, bad episodes up, we were just trying to figure it all out because we didn't know what we were doing. That's around the time that I had gotten more, had become a lot more friendly with Doug. Kennedy. Talked about a lot on this show, but and he says, "Oh, you got to talk to this Terry Phelan. I mean, she's the one that knows all about podcasting and radio and stuff." And I did call you up, and you gave me tremendous amount of insight, and it was very, very helpful. And it was a real pleasure to be able to talk to you about all that stuff. You gave me some hope that this was actually possible.
And it's a lot of fun. I learn something every week when I interview people, and I'm sure you do too.
Oh, yeah, and these guys do too. They tell me about it every time. I'm like, is there something going on here? They're like, yeah, we're learning something. I'm like, well, let's keep it rolling.
It's important work that we're doing.
Well, you answered most of the questions I had about the show, but I will ask one more because I remember this from a conversation we had on the phone a while back. What type of impact has your involvement with the show and the show in general had on your business?
You know, I don't know how much it's directly had, how much effect it's had on my business. It's had a wonderful effect on my networking with other professionals, because I am learning. I'm reaching out to other people in the green building circles, learning what they do. They find out what I do, and then we refer each other to clients and potential clients. It's hard for me, you know, I ask people when they contact me about maybe doing a project, I ask them how they heard about me, and most of them don't remember.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, I've seen your website several times. I don't know how I got there.
It keeps you on the public eye, and people do, yeah.
Yeah. But it helps me to be more comfortable talking in public.
Yeah.
I was really pretty shy before I started my radio show.
I've heard that about you.
And I found my voice. And now I enjoy public speaking. I might have been a little nervous about having a studio audience here, but I'm usually very comfortable now getting up in front of people, where before it would scare me. So I think that will continue to open more doors in my design business. And it also gives me enough variety in my life that designing is more fun again.
Yeah. Cool. Completely concur or agree. I don't know if that's the right word or not, but I found that to be the case with my doing it. It's much shorter of a period of time than you've been doing it, but I think we're getting close to the time that we probably want to, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to ask you a couple of these questions that I wasn't exactly sure where we were at time.
Okay.
But we're going to take a few of the questions and I'll shy away from the business a little bit, but learn about the unique and special person that I can see that you are and can feel from just chatting with you and stuff. And this is a question I always like to ask people. Who or what has been the greatest influence in your life so far?
Oh, wow.
That's heavy, isn't it?
That's heavy. There's so many.
Just pick one in particular, and then just know that everybody else that's out there that you're not being left out.
Well, I one of my mentors is David Eisenberg, who is a recovering recovering builder, as he calls it. He's been instrumental in changing the building codes, the national building codes, to include more alternative materials and really protect the general health of not only us as people, but of the environment. And he does it in such a kind and warm way. I think that's one of the reasons why I love who he is and what he's done. And so he's had a big influence. My father had a big influence on me. He started his own business when I was about 12, 13 years old. And I think that was a model for me and feeling like I could step out and start my own business when that time came.
Cool. What type of business was that?
He purchased a trade show display business.
Oh, okay.
So setting up the draperies.
I knew a whole family that did that,
Yeah, that was our family business for years. I sewed so many table drapes when I was in junior high school. And he had the foresight to purchase this business about 5 years before the World's Fair came to Spokane, which is where I grew up in Spokane.
Oh, okay.
And so that was a real growth factor for his business.
Great. So in your opinion, what's one thing that most of us could do to make a positive impact in life?
These are deep questions.
Yeah, we're one heavy podcast.
Pay attention.
Pay attention.
Pay attention to the little things, and I've found that if you hear about something or see something three times in a short period of time, the universe or God or whatever you connect with is trying to tell you something. Pay attention. There's so much that we miss, that we just don't see, we don't notice. Mm.
Great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
I love it. Okay, well, before we wrap it up here, let's take care of some of the logistics. Contact info. Let's start with the business first and then the podcast.
Okay.
Any phone numbers, email addresses, web links?
Website is www.livingshelter.com. All one word, living shelter. Easiest email is contact@livingshelter.com. And our office phone is 425-427-8643.
And what about the radio show or the podcast?
The radio podcast website is eco-logicalhome.com. And the contact@ecologicalhome.com is a good email address. And the phone number is the same. It's all out of the same office.
Great. So are there any special offers or upcoming events or other information that you want to share with the listeners? You figure about 2 weeks out. So.
Okay. Well, I'll be teaching some straw bale workshops, hands-on workshops at the Mother Earth News Fair at Puyallup. That's the first weekend in June.
And Ed Begley Jr. is going to be there.
Yeah, there's going to be some fun things going on.
I'm
going
to try to get
an
interview with that guy.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Anyhow, enough to take it away from you, but I've been wanting to get him from since my first episode.
So the Mother Earth News Fair, that's also a great place to go and learn all sorts of things about urban homesteading and, sustainable living. And then we'll also be at the Vashon Energy Fair, the 30th of June, the last weekend in June. And may have something coming up at 21 Acres in Woodinville, but we don't have any dates set for that yet.
Yeah, perhaps you might be interested in the future to come back and talk about specifically straw bale housing.
Sure.
Because I would love to hear more about that. I don't want to get into it too much, but I hear that on some of the islands around here, there's some significant communities where there's a lot of that going on.
Whidbey Island has over 25 straw bale homes just on the island, and I think only three of them were permitted. So they're not real public about
where they are. We're going to save that and have a special show about straw bale housing. I would love to talk about that. And
maybe I'd love that too.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about some other different types of alternative housing, like learn a little bit more about the Cobb housing and stuff like that.
Sure.
Do you have any wise advice or helpful hints or final words for us before we go?
I would just say remember synergy. I think synergy is really important. If you put two or three things together, often you get a total that's more than the sum of the parts. And that's how we can really make sustainability happen, is by just making wise choices that complement each other.
Great. Well, you've been listening to episode 32 of Greener Views. We'd like to thank Terry Phelan for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It's been a pleasure. On our next show, we will talk with Stephen Gilbert from Toxopedia, amongst a lot of other great ventures. On behalf of Randy, Michael, and myself, we'd like to say thank you to everyone listening. Special consideration goes to AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. We'd love to hear your ideas about guests and topics. And this is the part where my words got smeared out. And some other stuff about the show. So email info@greenerviews.net or call 206-650-4587. Check out greenerviews.net and youtube.com/greenerviews. Please check out other like-minded podcasts and businesses at healthyhomecast.com. Here's to health. Here's to the health, happiness, and love of all. Bye-bye. That was a brand new ending. What do you
think?
Email us and tell us. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network. Check out all their conscientious and sustainably focused podcast programs and businesses at healthyhomecast.com. Greener Views is created, developed, and produced by Daryl Whalen. Our audio engineer is Randy Parcell. Our video producer is Michael Schwartz of AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Music for this episode was provided by SlapJazz.com, DanFajans.Bandcamp.com, and JDHobson.com. Your feedback is important. Please feel free to contact us with any comments or questions, including suggestions for guests and program topics. You can call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info@greenerviews.net. Be sure to check back often. New episodes coming soon.